The $55 billion state budget signed into law by Governor Pritzker earlier this month did not contain any funding for new stadium projects being pursued by the White Sox and Bears. This comes at a time when lawmakers are reluctant to open the purse for privately owned sports teams that are worth billions of dollars, and yet the teams themselves are under more financial pressure due to changes in the media landscape. I'm WBBM Noon Business Hour host Rob Hart, and we talk about the business of sports with Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago, on this week's edition of At Issue. Well, Mark, thank you for joining us today on At Issue. And this has been a time of change, or this is a time of change, for two of Chicago's professional sports teams. Actually, if you want to expand that out, three or four of Chicago's professional sports teams, as far as the place they want to call home. The Bears and the White Sox are seeking a new stadium, and it's been hung up in limbo, Mark, as they try to get public financing to build these new facilities. But then earlier this month, the Chicago Fire announced that they wanted to build a soccer stadium in the 78 in the South Loop, that parcel of land just south of downtown Chicago, and that Joe Mansueto will pay for it with his own money, $600 million. So how does that offer to pay for the Fire Stadium with private funds, how does that change the game, no pun intended, for the Bears and the White Sox?
Well, it's interesting. There's a perception in town that teams have been trying to eat at the public trough for public stadiums, public sports facilities here, and that that's standard operating procedure. It's not exactly correct. The United Center was built with private money on private land. The Cubs, with billion-plus dollars of renovations at Wrigley Field, that was all done, private money, private land, private stadium. Ryan Field for Northwestern University, all with private money on private land. The Bears have said that they will pay the entirety of the cost of the stadium in Arlington Heights, private money for the stadium, private land that they own as well. So we have had some alternative examples. The renovations of Soldier Field, that was an unusual deal, to be honest. Usually there's a rule of thumb: the larger the market, the smaller the public sector subsidy. That was a deal that at the time Mayor Daley wanted to have done because it was a facility that was under the control of the city. If you around here, it's really great. The politicians enjoy having control over public contracts, employees, a lot of money being spent every year. They like having control over bonds being sold and the lawyers and the bond houses that do it. So there's a lot of benefit to the politicians here when it's under the public sector control. So that was about $500 million of public sector money going into a publicly owned building that the Bears leased. And you had, of course, the White Sox Stadium, that was what was the new Comiskey at the time. The White Sox were going to leave Chicago, go to St. Petersburg with a deal that was already done. And then Governor Jim Thompson, the late Governor Jim Thompson, and Speaker Michael Madigan, who I guess is on his way to prison somewhere, did a deal that allowed for a new stadium to be built with a hotel motel tax funding within Cook County. And that was a change. And then some years later, Rahm Emanuel pushed through the building of the Wintrust Arena, an arena nobody needed, in a place nobody wanted. But for some reason, there was a little extra money somewhere in the McCormick Place capital budget, and I guess somebody benefited from that one. And they built that one. Nobody talks about that one very much, but it was a boondoggle before the ink dried. But there's no team there. Well, I guess now the women's basketball team plays there, but that wasn't on anybody's radar back then.
I mean, the big moment for Wintrust Arena was when the Sky clinched the championship there in 2021. And I would imagine just having a sports facility, and DePaul plays there as well, putting it a little closer to the DePaul University campus versus going all the way out to the Allstate Arena, which seems like playing at the Horizon, which was the old name, a vestige of the Ray Meyer glory years when you could pack the Rosemont Horizon to see a top five ranked basketball team. But times changed, and DePaul is they're back in the city in the South Loop now, in Wintrust Arena, and it's a nice place to take in a game. But again, there were a lot of questions there about whether or not the city had the money to pay for that at the time, and whether or not that money could have been used for other things.
That's part of the perception of taxpayer money going to sports facilities. But the reality is that hasn't been the standard. And what Joe Mansueto is doing is in keeping with the Bulls, the Blackhawks, the Cubs, and the Bears, using private money to build a sports facility in the third largest market in the country. So that's in keeping with that pattern. Now, all that having been said, if the White Sox are to stay here in Chicago, it's likely that there's going to need to be some public money. And I say that because the White Sox don't draw very well. They are the second team and there's a big gap between number one and number two. Costs a lot of money to build a baseball stadium these days, and especially in a market with high labor costs and high infrastructure costs as well. And although I would doubt that there is money to build the entirety of a stadium, I think there'll have to be a true public-private partnership with the White Sox going forward. There would need to be some, because there will be other markets that very much want a baseball team that are going to likely offer the entirety of a stadium. And with the changes in baseball economics and how local broadcast revenues have become far less significant with cord cutting that has taken place, and how regional sports networks have been, they've gone into bankruptcy all around the country. And Comcast, NBC Sports won't even cover, has dropped the White Sox and the Bulls and the Blackhawks channel. There are likely to be other markets that would make an attractive offer to the White Sox. So I would hope that those economic realities come to the fore if the interest is to keep the White Sox in town.
Now, before we talk about the Ishbia family's involvement with the White Sox, you and I were on the air together on the Noon Business Hour when the announcement was officially made. However, you knew about it a couple of months in advance. But I think this is a good jumping off point to talk about the changing economics of sports and how some things are changing radically and some things haven't changed very much at all. We talk about the public financing deal to pay to build new Comiskey Park that brought about the creation of the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority. And by the way, if you want to really get some good listening on YouTube, Charles McBaron, who was the WMAQ All News 67 reporter in Springfield, he was doing live play-by-play from the State House floor that night, June 30th of 1988. And incidentally, you hear the midnight time tone hit a few minutes before the gavel finally comes down, which was that legendary parliamentary maneuver that Speaker Madigan was able to pull off, extending the midnight deadline by a couple of minutes. So Governor Thompson, who was literally on the floor of the House, could bend a few more elbows and actually get that legislation over the line. But public-private partnerships or publicly funded stadia are things that have gone back to the 30s. Municipal Stadium in Cleveland, Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, all of the concrete donuts in Atlanta and Pittsburgh and other cities were presented as urban renewal. How did that economic model work in the 60s, and how does that differ from a taxpayer-funded stadium like Wright Field today?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind is the cost of the buildings. Back in the 60s, these things cost in the tens of millions of dollars. Literally, for $40 or $50 or $60 million, you could build a multi-purpose stadium that would be good for baseball and football. That's all they cost back then. Now these things are costing literally billions of dollars to build. The costs have gotten, frankly, out of control. Everybody's building, you know, wants the best of everything, electronics and digital and scoreboards and sound and seating. And it's just gotten way out of control in terms of the cost, when effectively what you're doing is you're sitting in your seat watching the game most of the 3 hours that you're in the building. So the cost has gotten really different. Now, back in the 60s and 70s, you had grants from the federal government called Urban Development Action Grants. And a big chunk of the money that went into these buildings were UDAG grants, interestingly enough. And you had financing that were tax-exempt bonds that were allowed to be, up until that, the Reagan tax reform of 1982 or 4 or whatever that was, you could use tax-exempt financing to build these things. And it was actually a Chicago congressman, Dan Rostenkowski, Chairman Rostenkowski of the very powerful House Ways and Means Committee, who, rumor has it, was pretty pissed at something that happened here in Chicago and took out the ability to finance sports facilities using tax-exempt financing. All politics is local, I guess. And he took it out in that Tax Reform Act of 84 or some year like that. And so you then had you had to be creative in how you'd finance these things. Now you'd start financing them with tourism taxes and hotel motel taxes and other kinds of generally applicable taxes, which you could still finance on a tax-exempt basis against. And then the cost started getting higher and higher. Some of the stadiums that we look at today that are perfectly fine NFL stadiums cost $270, $300 million. Patriots Stadium, Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. These things were about $300 million. Now we wouldn't even consider a stadium if it wasn't $2 billion. I mean, that's how expensive these things have gotten.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We're talking about the Chicago sports stadium scene and the changing economics of sports with Mark Gannis, who is the president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago, frequent noon business hour guest. We talk about the changing economics in sports and the reason why the Bears want this new stadium, the reason why the White Sox want a new stadium, is that the economic model of sports is beginning to break down. And that for decades, teams have been living off of the cable bundle. And that if you were a cable TV subscriber, you were in effect buying a ticket to a sporting event in Chicago, regardless of if you're a diehard fan or knew nothing about the local teams and the people who played on them. But cord cutting is happening. And as a result, that amount of money you get from cable TV revenue continues to go down. And the one way that the teams are trying to make up for that, outside of the direct-to-consumer streaming, is building the ballpark village, building hotels, building concert venues, building all sorts of things around the stadium that could funnel money into the team that used to come from the cable TV package. The Cubs, they were very innovative. They were first out of the gate in Chicago and realizing what control over the entire ballpark area meant. I think they learned a lot of lessons from Fenway Park in Boston in that regard. And the Sox are trying to rebuild that or make that happen in the South Loop if they get their way. Is that a 100% replacement for cable TV revenue, or does it come close?
It is not a replacement for cable TV revenue, because cable TV revenue is recurring and contractual, meaning that you're getting that check every month regardless. It's not a variable revenue stream. For many years, it was you get that check from the RSN, from whether it be Fox or whether it be Comcast, at one point it was AT&T that owned a number of them, and you got that check. You didn't have to really do anything. It didn't matter how well the team played on the field. Didn't matter how much money you put in the players on the field. You were getting that check every month or every quarter. And boy, that was that was a lovely time period. The baseball teams really enjoyed that time period. It's no longer that way. Now you've got to earn more. Streaming, direct to consumer streaming, it's not even a fraction of what the subscriber checks used to be, and right now on a national basis, to give you an idea, at the height, we were at about 113 million homes. We're under 50 now. We're in the 40s. We'll probably stabilize because it's going to go down. Cable and satellite will go down under 40, but we're adding like Hulu and YouTube TV bundles. So we'll probably get stabilized somewhere in the mid 40s. That's a huge drop. That's a massive drop. And in many cases now, it's not the sports package is now a premium package, like what's going to happen here in Chicago, where next year Marquee will be in the premium package for Comcast cable subscribers, and the White Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks of RSN will be in the premium package. So you'll have to opt in, which is another 20 some odd dollars a month for just those that opt in. So it's not going to be in basic cable any longer, which is going to reduce the number of subscribers very significantly. And that has a triple effect. Number one is less money coming in from the subscription. Number two is less advertising money because you have fewer eyeballs. And number three, you have less a smaller audience to market your games to, for your sponsors, for your in-stadium advertising that's shown on television, and to sell tickets to. So it has a very significant effect. So this is not a one-for-one substitute. Now, it is a way you can try and create additional revenue. So you look at what the Bulls and Blackhawks are doing around the United Center.
The 1901 project.
Exactly, the 1901. That's a decade-plus project that they're looking at doing. It's going to have $8 billion or so ultimately invested in it. That's a big project. It'll take a while. There's a lot of money that has to go in. But over the course of decades, I'll call it decades, there'll be wealth created for the two families and the limited partners that are in the Bulls also. That's good, but that's not income on an annual basis to be able to pay players. There's a difference there.
Now, you and I were on the air together earlier this month when the announcement came down that the Ishbia family, Justin Ishbia and Jerry Reinsdorf, had reached a transition of ownership agreement. It is a very long process. It ends around 2034. And the Ishbia family, very wealthy, the mortgage broker family. He's a Shore Capital Partners. He's an investor himself. We're talking about a family that, if you combine everybody in it, it's a net worth that's $14, $15, $16 billion. So it's a level of wealth that that is unheard of as far as Chicago sports ownership is concerned throughout its history. How does that change the ability of the White Sox to potentially privately build the stadium while at the same time taking advantage of potentially tax money to develop the infrastructure around wherever they want to stay?
Well, it having additional financial resources certainly doesn't hurt. We see what Stan Kroenke did out in L.A., where he put up more than $5 billion to build a football stadium. But what he also knew was he had a big real estate development that he could put more money into and be able to start looking at that as a way to offset some of the costs that he put into the sports project, and could look long term. Stan's a major real estate developer. His wife, Walmart, heirs as well. So that was you can look at things with a different time horizon. And one of the really, I think, great things to look at with Justin here, I've spent a little bit of time talking to Justin. He's young and he loves sports. He is looking at this not, how do I make money this year or next year? He's looking at this as decades, generations even. And that's a really good approach, especially if you have capital that you can be patient, because it's something that you love, not something you're trying to flip, something you're trying to make cash off of every year or need to. That's a really healthy approach. And that's good for White Sox fans and good for the city and state and the county. But every deal has got to also make sense. You're not just going to throw money into a black hole. So it is still going to have to be a deal that makes sense. But maybe there can be procedural assistances that governments can that a government can provide that that allows other ways to make or to earn income down the road that doesn't necessarily cost the government tax dollars. There are ways to come up with ideas. Now, I'm not sure this city hall has anywhere near the creativity or ability to come up with those kinds of ideas, to be perfectly frank. But, you know, if you had a really enlightened kind of governmental apparatus and you had parties that actually understood how things work and we didn't have the toxicity we have and the limitations that we have these days in city, county, and state government, Justin is an excellent person to have as a partner.
And I think this is the larger point is that we talk about a sports team as a business. It is a business, but it's also a public trust. It is a business. It's designed to make money, but there are also fans who have a very deep emotional connection to that team that may not exist with some or other private sector entity. I mean, United Airlines is one of the businesses headquartered here, and I don't know very many people who wear the old United Airlines tulip in the way that sports fans wear old sports jerseys. When the White Sox won the World Series, we put flowers and we put a little pennant on my grandfather's grave. I know plenty of people who, when the Cubs won the World Series, they did the same. They sought out relatives who are no longer among us and made sure that they were included in the celebration of the Cubs winning the World Series. That's the emotional attachment we have to these teams. If you're a political leader in Chicago or any other city, how do you accomplish that balancing act of knowing you have to be a responsible steward of the taxpayers' money, that you want to make sure that this entity that people love stays in the city and doesn't move out to the suburbs or move to some other city, while at the same time making sure that this money-making entity, the team, continues to be a successful business?
I'm sorry. Did I hear you use the terms responsible steward of the taxpayers' money and the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago? I'm sorry. I thought I heard you put those lines together. That's a little joke, but for somebody who's lived here for as long as I have, those lines don't go together for me. But let me try and deal with the substance.
I kind of teed that up for you, didn't I?
And that's not about sports facilities or sports teams. That's just across the board. It just those two thoughts don't go together around here. but put that on the side for a moment. The idea what you've just said is something that is enormously important. You talk about your dad. You talked about the Cubs fans and what they have done. Think of Pope Leo. I mean, all of a sudden, Chicago is identified around the world because Pope Leo is all of a sudden in a picture sitting at a World Series game 20 years ago here in Chicago cheering on the White Sox, and that picture goes around the world. I travel a great deal around the world. I have projects literally around the world, mainly sports-related projects. You go anywhere to this day, and you see Chicago Bulls caps and jerseys. You see that number 23 everywhere. Chicago is still known for the Bulls and for Michael Jordan. There's an identity that communities generate primarily from their sports teams. And Chicago is right up there as one of the cities that is known for its sports teams. The White Sox are obviously the Bears. I mean, you know, the Cubs, the Bulls, and it's just the case. So what you have to always keep in mind here when you're a politician and you're looking at these things is you can't make these decisions based on the current legislative session or the current election campaign cycle. You have got to look at this as generational, multi-generational, because the decisions that they will make don't just affect people this year or the next 2 years. It will affect people over the next 20, 30, 40, 50, the Cubs case, 100 some odd years. And you just have to understand that these are really important emotional connections that people have with their city and their community.
I do want to ask you one last thing, and this is about another business of sports thing. And you mentioned how as far as the brands of the Cubs and the White Sox are concerned. They're basically in different galaxies in terms of the brand recognition and the national appeal. And part of that, ironically, came from the Cubs and the Cubs ownership and the Tribune Company giving it away in the 1980s. I mean, the Jerry Reinsdorf and Eddie Einhorn, when they took over the White Sox in 1981, they were early adopters of cable because other teams in other cities were experimenting in cable TV. And in Chicago, their way of monetizing TV viewership was sports vision. Meantime, Channel 9 was giving the product away. The rights fees were incredibly below market for what a team like the Cubs could charge. But the Tribune felt, you know, this is a source of television program. This was 3 hours of Tribune Company product that was available in Chicago and also across the country on cable. And that low-cost access turned the Cubs into a national brand. Now they're on cable. And I think a lot of fans say, they're having a very hard time finding the game. I mean, are people being priced out of attending games? Are they being priced out of watching games because of all of the streaming options that exist?
They are being priced out of watching games. It's not just being priced out of watching games. It's hard to find them because of all the different streamers that are out there. They're not being priced out of attending games. The Cubs are going to draw 3.3 million people. Again, this year, the stadium is going to be filled most games. Maybe their prices are high, but the White Sox prices are low, so anybody can get to White Sox games. That's not a problem. They're not being priced out. But one of the big issues, and this is not a Chicago issue, this is a national issue, that the networks, the streamers, the leagues are dealing with right now, is we're having tremendous friction with the fans who don't like having to find where the games are that they want to watch. It's really becoming a big problem because you want to watch a game, and is it on Peacock? Is it on ESPN? Is it on Fox? Is it on over the air? Is it on cable? Is it on Marquee? It's a real problem, and it is causing a lot of anger on the part of fans, and in many cases they're just giving up. Trying to watch the games if they can't find it right away. And this is a problem with streaming generally. There are too many streamers. The switching over from one to another is a real problem. It's causing friction. I was talking to Jimmy Pitaro, who's the chairman of ESPN, and Jimmy was telling me that one of the things that you're going to see in the ESPN streaming package is that any event that's on ESPN, on any of their packages, anywhere, you look at the event, you hit the button for the event, it will find it for you, but only ESPN stuff, ESPN and ABC stuff, not anybody else's. But they have a lot of different events and they have different networks, including in conferences and things, but it will find it for you. You won't have to look for it. But if it's on Fox, it won't be on there. If it's on if it's on TNT, it won't be on there. If it's on Paramount, it won't be on there. CBS, it won't be on there. Fans are really starting to get upset about this. So it's a big, big issue, much bigger than people understand. I've seen some of the surveys and it has really gotten the fans ticked. So it is a big issue that you've just identified that we're going to see a lot more discussion about. And there better be some solutions to it by some of these streamers as we go forward.
Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Corp Limited in Chicago, thank you for joining us on At Issue this weekend. If you want to hear the program again, you can find the podcast at WBBMNewsRadio.com and on the Odyssey app. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of At Issue. I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.